Pulp MX Network production.
EVS Sports brings you a cheeky Brit and an American YouTube racing sensation weekly on the LVK More Than Moto podcast. Here's your hosts, Lewis Phillips and Kellen Brower.
Welcome back, everybody, to the EVS Sports LVK More Than Moto podcast, episode number 13 here on the Steve Mathis Podcast Network. I'm Kellen Brower from MotoOnline.com, Lewis Phillips from Vital MX. Back in studio this week. You were just saying that it felt weird to drive back over to my house this week, but you're here.
I put in a lot of effort to come here.
You did. We've seen a lot of each other in the last 24 hours.
I'm tired.
Already? Yes. You're over me.
Yeah. Tired.
I'm sorry, Lewis. I tried my best to accommodate you on a nice, lovely drive home today.
You know what?
I tried to get you breakfast, too, and you just not having breakfast.
I just realized I've done it again.
What?
There we go. Now people think I hate you. I was joking.
Yeah, you're joking. We're having fun.
It's like a disease.
It's like a disease.
I can't help myself just like saying stupid stuff.
A little bit. Yeah.
I'm mad, really.
That's okay, Lewis. We'll make it happen here. As Steve is texting something, and we'll get around to it.
Steve's text scared me then. That scares me. Someone texts me like that, I'm like,
okay.
Shit.
Now we're just talking nonsense a little bit here. But yeah, we have some fun topics to get into today because we were on Pulp this week. I was really trying hard, and we tried hard on this the drive home to come up with topics that we didn't already talk about. I mean, we're on the show for 5 hours. Not necessarily that everyone will listen to the Pulp show, but in case you did, we didn't want to like rehash some things that we went over. So
yes.
I think we came up with some good ones.
Yes, quite random this week.
A little bit random. A little bit more off the wall, I think.
But it is true that this year there hasn't been many... Not stories, but they have like it's been quite status quo throughout. No major injuries. Okay, we haven't had like the same winner every week, but it's been like the same top five riders. So first, fourth, whatever.
Right.
There's not been much fluctuation.
No, but I think that we're gonna start seeing some fluctuation as these championship battles tighten up, and then we have to move into outdoors off of all of this and try to preview all of it. So I think we're like this next little month is gonna be fun. I think we're gonna have a lot of fun topics.
Okay, let's have fun.
Okay, let's have fun, Lewis. Before we get into it today, big shout out to EVS Sports. Experience the pinnacle of knee protection and injury prevention with the EVS Web Eclipse Knee Brace. For over 39 years, EVS has relentlessly honed their engineering expertise, consistently delivering award-winning knee braces. This legacy of excellence is embedded in every facet of the new Web Eclipse, which represents the culmination of their tireless dedication to innovation and rider safety. Use code LVK30 to save 30% off today. We also want to give a shout out to Nomura, the presenting sponsor of this show, the leading provider of engine components for motocross, ATV, UTV, and personal watercraft for over 2 decades. Nomura has been the preferred choice for premium and dependable engine components for more than 20 years. Whether you're restoring your vintage bike, rebuilding your four-wheeler, or upgrading your new 450 race motor, Nomura has you covered. Our extensive line of cast and forge pistons, connecting rods, gasket kits, engine valves, and soon cylinder kits that enhance your engine's performance. Keep an eye out for our new and innovative products in 2024 and beyond. Stay up to date by following us on Instagram at Nomura_technologies. And lastly, another shout out to Racetech Suspension. They will have our Racetech fan topic of the week. For 40 years, Racetech has been supplying the motorcycle industry with high quality suspension components made right here in the USA. From modern to vintage, Racetech is your go-to source for suspension performance. Before we jump into our topics though, Lewis, we're a Phoenix Racing shirt today. And we were kind of just briefly talking about this before we started the show. Just wanted to give a shout out to the Phoenix Honda guys and their Phoenix racing shop, because they also have their ATV team and everything ran out of there. Was broken into on Sunday night, I believe, right? It was Sunday night. Yeah. And they had 11 of their championship bikes stolen out of the showroom. So if you're in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, keep an eye out for any Phoenix Honda bikes doing things that you wouldn't expect a Phoenix Honda bike to do, and perhaps alert authorities if that's the case.
Where did you get your shirt from?
Loretta's.
Okay. I was going to say, I've never seen Phoenix Racing merch.
Yeah. I actually have like a couple things that they had at Loretta's. So.
Did you pay?
No, I did not. But
life of a celebrity.
This is what happens when you just hang out with David Eller during a rain delay for a very long period of time. So
all I can tell you is that they could do with your money right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's unfortunate, honestly. Like, it sucks that we see, this is not part of the show, but this, I feel like we see a lot of showrooms, a lot of dealerships being broken into of late. And it's like a it's not like an epidemic or whatever.
It's another
disease. It just sucks. Like, these guys are, most of these dealerships are like working really, really hard, and not necessarily like killing it or making a ton of money, and then all of their inventory gets stolen. Like, crappy. And then in this case, this is like memorabilia. This is massive stuff for the Phoenix Honda team. So
it's a risky run when you are involved in a sport that costs a lot of money. People see money.
People see money. That's right. But I think in this case, people saw dirt bikes they can do wheelies on. Which,
Or sell.
Yeah. Strip of parts and all that stuff. I'd imagine. Hopefully not. Hopefully they get them back. Or at least some of them. I mean, you don't want to lose all of them, right? So.
Yeah.
Anyway, hopefully for them, they get a few back, or, you know, we catch these guys, or what have you.
We won't be catching these guys.
But they catch them. But yeah, Charlotte, North Carolina area, keep an eye out, keep an ear out, and all that. All right, let's get into our topics today. Topic number one, we kind of talked about this a little bit on Pulp last night, so it's a mixed one, but we wanted to go a little bit further on expanding on this topic, and it's the idea of training compounds. We had Marvin Muskan on the phone last night, and when Steve was asking him about like training at Alden's and why Vial left Alden's and chose to do kind of his own program. We've seen this year that Kitchen chose to leave Star, do his more or less own program with PC. Like, one of the first times that PC was like, yeah, whatever, like, you don't have to stay in California, go to Florida, do your stuff, like all that. So we're seeing a little bit more freedom, it seems, with the top guys being able to do what they want. And so let's start off by talking about this with this topic, Lewis. Is the training facility model, like the Alden, the Star Yamaha model, is it still the go-to model, like at this current point in time, if you're trying to win in the sport?
Yeah, it has to be, because you do need that infrastructure, that stability, because realistically, the alternative to a training facility is local public tracks, which isn't going to work. But I believe that there needs to be some sort of hybrid here where it's not live and die by the training facilities. It's quite obvious that everyone is now leaning towards some sort of flexibility, which is understandable. I can imagine it would be quite a grind and quite tiring to repeatedly do the same thing over and over and over and not be able to focus on the specific areas that you want to quote-unquote fix. So, yeah, I think that training facilities are fine. The mentality that we need to lock guys in the training facility and make sure they are following this program to a T is flawed.
Right. I feel like when the Alden facility really started taking off, it was like this idea that you get two or three of the best riders in the sport together to work together to build off of each other and make each other better. So that's why you'd have like Roczen and Villopoto training together. You would have Dunge and Marv and Anderson training together and stuff like that. Which is what the Star Boys are doing, right? It's like, let's get all of our guys together. We have some of the best 250 riders in the world on our program, so let's make them outdo each other every day, right? Like, get better off of building off of each other. But what I think it looks a little bit like it's happening more is that you have top guys that are not, like, in any way really, like, connected, like, via team, sponsor, or anything like that, getting together and training together and doing this kind of on their own, like Kenny and Chase are.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Lawrence brothers doing their own thing, but they're bringing other guys in to also, you know, train with and help each other out a little bit as well. So it seems like it's not even that it has to be forced to do it. These guys almost are willingly doing it anyway.
It's an interesting time, because the top 450 rider at KTM, Chase Sexton, moved away from the model. Top 250 rider at KTM, Tom Vial, moved away from the model. Hayden Deegan, the top 250 rider at Star, okay, he's not moved away from the model, but he sought some sort of fresh air and space to work on his technique and was crediting that for his win. So if the top guys are looking around, I believe that's enough food for thought for the powers that be to consider. I don't know what the answer is, because like, they're not going to say, well, yeah, we'll buy a training facility then, and then you can use it half the time. But it's not the facility that's the problem. It's the training and the fact that it's kind of just a like one-size-fits-all program.
Right. So with the idea of training facilities too, Would you, yes or no? I just want yes or no. Is Eli Tomac the best rider of the last 10 years?
Wait, what's the last 10 years? 2014?
Or like, let's say last, since Dungy is retired, is Eli Tomac the best rider? Or even yes. Before Dungy? Yeah? You would say yes?
Yeah.
Eli Tomac has not been a training facility guy. He has his facility that he works at and does his stuff. And occasionally some guys come and ride with him. Deegan, Osborne, Townley, I think at one point or something like that. But
Townley went to Colorado.
Maybe it was...
Townley? You said Ben Townley.
I thought it was him, but maybe I'm thinking of Townley and Zach linking up and I just think of Zach and Eli working together. Either way, Eli's always been his like off the grid self a little bit, right? But has become arguably the best rider of the last decade.
Yeah, because he's listening and he's listening to his body. He's making educated decisions off of what he should do. And obviously trainers are needed because you've got 250 guys that don't know what to do. Marvin said as much, that he wasn't like confident enough to make his own program or whatever. So you do need that guidance, but I think guidance is the best way to put it. Not what would be the more serious version of guidance? Strict behavior.
Yeah, I guess.
There's probably a better word for it.
Regimented
than
schedule of some kind. I think why we're even talking about this is because we've seen 450 guys do this, right? Webb left the Baker's factory at one point and that didn't work.
Yeah.
But we've seen other guys do it. I think that this is spread into the 250 class now, right? And that's where it's becoming like, this is kind of changing on a bigger level in AMA racing because Kitchen did it and it's working.
Yeah.
And Vial did it and it's kind of working. And so it's becoming a little bit of a repeatable pattern for even guys that you would expect. They're younger, they need that regimented schedule, and it's still working for them regardless.
Yeah, and look back, well, to your point about the last 10 years. 10 years ago, this sport was all Loudon Baker. Everyone wanted him. Everyone believed that was the key to success. Someone signed Loudon Baker. You just presumed that rider would then catapult themselves much higher than they were previously. That line of thinking has gone. When do you even hear someone mention the name Loudon Baker nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, you say they're training at the Baker's factory. Like, that's it. Like, you don't necessarily say, Alden's here and watching. And
the culture has changed.
I think so.
And I think it's also partly to do with, like, now every rider has grown up from day one in the Carmichael Stewart era.
Yeah.
So, like, the model has always been work hard, don't dick around, and all of that. Yeah. So I think there's almost maybe less babysitting needed now. More, again, guidance.
Right, right. It's also really fresh because Hayden Deegan just commented a bunch this weekend about not staying at the Star facility for the last, I think, week or so. He went to the Sandbox and trained with Kenny and those guys and was working on technique stuff, like you said. So is it cause and effect? During this break, he chose to do something a little bit different, that he was 2% better at Foxborough, or is it coincidence?
I would say coincidence because Hayden Deegan is that good.
Yeah.
Like, he can win on any weekend. So that's not, like, there's not really a reason for that. But I have to pay attention to the amount of time that he spent referencing it. I mean, then again,
right,
he was questioned about it.
But he didn't, like, shy away from it. Like, he was really, I thought, in depth about why.
Yeah.
He didn't just say, like, yeah, just changing it up. He was like, no, we're doing motos every day at Star. I wanted to work on technique. Can't really do that there. So I left and I went to Sandbox and did it. And wins right away.
I just would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to see what the other Star riders said. Like, can we do that then?
Right.
Because I think, well, obviously it costs them money to be there, maybe?
Right.
Presumably. Maybe?
Well, I think if you're on the team, okay. I don't think so.
But still.
Yeah. To surmise all of this, though, does it, like, will we see an ebb and flow of what works and what doesn't work, like, continue? Or is this freedom push a little bit going to start being the trend?
It's specific to every rider, but I do believe that everyone will start to want freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
well, I mean, they all really want freedom, but it's what's right for them, right? So,
but I believe that people are looking at Chase, looking at Tom, and going, that looks nice, looking at Kenny, looking at Levi. I mean, look, those riders I named, you look at those riders, they're killing it.
Yeah, but has Coop not been working his butt off at Star, and suddenly he's walking into the middle of the 450 title fight?
I would
again,
be curious. So. Yeah, but I would be curious to see just how, like, what Coop's deal is there.
Because I mean, it seems like he rides there a ton. Like, no, I know not, that, maybe but not I mean, part of the 250 motos.
Yeah,
and, like,
I would imagine he has some. He can like figure out his own deal a little bit.
Right. Yeah, I think that there is a little bit of his own.
I would
deal.
Imagine, like, he's more monitored.
He probably does a lot of work with J. Coop. No, I mean, we should ask him this stuff.
J. Coop is so, like, off the radar. I don't even know where he is in the world.
Yeah.
Is he training Narm? Who knows?
Probably. All right, so yeah, I think it's an interesting topic. Either way, like, to see what is going to happen in the next 4 or 5 years with that training facility dynamic is really kind of
and
fun to watch.
And once again, we need to do better, because we can do a story on this.
Oh, yeah, sure.
We should, like, we could
We thought of it, and we're like, let's talk about
it. Yeah, but now I want to interview Alden and interview DaCosta.
Let's do it.
Would DaCosta, DaCosta bought into the program, didn't he? He must have been the pushing force behind the KTM deal with Alden.
I mean, I think when things don't go right, the first person that calls Cooper Webb and says, hey, you should probably go back to Alden's is Roger DaCosta.
I just wonder, I wonder if even even Roger would talk about the fact that Chase and Tom aren't training there. They are riding there. They're not, training with Alden.
Honestly, I think Roger would. He's usually pretty open about, like, if you hit him with a pointed question of why, like, can you give me an answer about this? He will tell you straight up why.
Yeah, so. We should utilize Roger more.
He's great. I like him.
Yep.
So yeah, it'll be fun to watch how that dynamic shifts moving forward. Let's talk about our next topic, though. And we kind of thought about it in regards to, like, Hunter Lawrence and J. Coop, who we've talked about a lot this year, I feel like, already. Or of late, at least. We've talked about them a lot. We're looking at it as like, oh, those are true 450 rookies right now. Whereas Jet, we were on the drive home talking about how, man, it's weird to think a year ago we're going to these East-West showdowns and Jet's like in the class, like battling for this West title that he was trying to win. And it's kind of weird to think that that's only a year ago, because he seems like he's been on a 450 for a while. Obviously, you have a perfect season outdoors and then win SMX that, yeah, things look like they, you know, happened rather quickly. But now we're in this 450 title fight. He's led it for a long ways. He's still in the championship lead, but now it's tied. And the reason we wanted to bring up this topic is, like, would this change anything had Jet Lawrence decided to wait, do 250 motocross last year, and then go racing 450 supercross this year? Would it have changed anything? And what do we think about the idea of 450 guys, when they choose to move up, it's in 450 motocross first?
Obviously, the common sense answer to that is, if someone is doing 250 then 450, you would need a 450 supercross only guy, which would be very hard to do.
Right.
So that's almost just destroyed that theory off the blocks. But I do believe there is, especially 250 guys, I believe there is credibility behind the idea that they start with all of outdoors and then go into supercross. We saw it 2009, Tommy Searle, Tyler Rattray, they moved to America from Europe, and instead of jumping into supercross, they raced outdoors first. And I do believe there's some merit to that. It takes the edge off a little bit. Even racing outdoors here, either as a rookie or a foreigner, is a shock to the system. And that experience can help lessen the shock when arriving in a Monster Energy Supercross, which is the most frightening of all series.
Right. So to switch to Hunter and J. Coop again, though, had they moved up, let's say they moved up the same time Jet did, they both raced 450 motocross last year, are they doing better in 450 supercross right now, or is that not a cause and effect at all? We're just looking at where they would be, period.
I would say no. A, because J. Coop raced some 450 supercrosses last year.
Mm-hmm.
B, the riders who are ahead of Hunter and J. Coop are really, really good. So to reach that level, Ken Roczen, who's been in the class for 10 years, is going to take some doing. So no, I don't necessarily believe that anything would change. But let me ask you this on the flip side. What if Jet had raced 450 Supercross last year?
So like didn't defend or try to win the West title and do the both coasts and just went straight to 450 Supercross.
Yep. Last year he was just a full-time 450 rider. Would what he's doing now have happened last year? Would he have been in contention last year? Or did the program of one more 250 Supercross season actually help? Or did it just delay the inevitable?
I think last year he would not have been this good. But I think I personally believe the moving up to 450 motocross and it going the way it did has changed a lot about how Jet mentally prepares for this 450 Supercross season. Because imagine he comes in, he's never raced these guys, except maybe Motocross of Nations, like that probably would have happened, but never raced these guys before. Probably thinks he's awesome. And then let's say the first two rounds wins A1 San Francisco 9th. I feel like his confidence would not be where it would be having a whole back, you know, behind you of winning a lot of motos against these same guys, winning SMX against these same guys. He would suddenly be like, oh, this is a little bit tougher than I thought. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that notion extends to the rest of the field as well because it changes the way that they view him. They don't view him as a rookie now. They're like, eh, right. Boy. Yeah. So there's that too. It kind of is it stretches all round.
I think so. So like you said, the logistics of it kind of suck for a team because you would have to probably only have a 450 Supercross guy unless you wanted to take three bikes outdoors and have this transition happen. But that, to be fair, like that's kind of rare with, unless you're, I guess, like Husky and the Austrian brands or Honda, because like,
what's rare?
Well, I'm saying like PC is not just going to be like, yeah, we want this guy on a 450 outdoors.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, it's, you have 250 teams and you have 450 teams. Star, yes. I guess, is also kind of bridging that gap. But anyway.
Yeah, Star's a bit weird with that, isn't it? Because they are, but they aren't.
Right.
They are one team, but I for some reason really feel like they aren't one team.
Right. But if you are one of the Austrian teams, like, so let's think about Shimoda, because he's a Honda guy. We're thinking, you know, probably 26 he'll be on a 450.
Yeah, because his 250 contract is to the end of next year.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's just hypothetically say Shimoda like crushes outdoors this year, wins a title, goes into 250 Supercross next year, and does well, wins a title or not or whatever. Is it smart of Honda then if they want to re-sign him beyond 2025 to be like, I mean, he's already won the 250 title. We got to put him on a 450 outdoors and help him out.
No.
It's not smart of them.
No.
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 Okay.
Because at the end of the day, I believe that decision would have to come from the rider. Because at the end of the day, the team in most situations won't have the rider forever. So they're almost, the riders are almost ticking a box.
Right.
And one of those boxes would be 250 outdoors.
Do you think that Jet's, the specific Jet moving up to the 450 class, the timing of it was just like kind of convenient? Like he did what he needed to do. He won his two 250 outdoor titles. He didn't need to win a third. Like that would be ridiculous at that point in their eyes. So move to a 450. Why not? Like he's done what he's needed to do.
Yeah, ultimately Jet Lawrence is like he is a phenomenal talent. So you move heaven and earth for him. Okay. And HRC, I'm sure, a certain, well, they've got him signed to a long enough contract where they know that he is like their investment. He's not going to be going to KTM in a year's time. So that changes the game as well. But yeah, I would say this is more relevant 450 wise to the phenomenal talents. Like Shimoda, realistically, is he going to win a 450 championship ever? Probably not. So like, whatever. Jet, you're kind of building to like, we can win next year. So let's plan for that. Like,
okay.
You're not planning. With a phenomenal talent like Jet, Chase, Coop, all of those guys. I'm not going to name them all. You know who you are. It's just a different dynamic, isn't it? Because you're not planning to encounter rookie slumps and troubles and everything. You're planning to win. So your strategy is to win.
Right.
Whereas with Shimoda, in that instance, your strategy would be, let's just see how this goes.
Yeah, okay. I see your point because like they'll redesign stuff based on what they think is possible for their guy.
Yeah. Like for instance, when Chase moved up to the 450 with Honda, that was similar, I feel.
Yeah, no.
They spotted that there was potential there.
But there's another guy like you that I think it worked. It didn't work right away because Supercross was crash fest a little bit for Chase, but I think having him have that 450 experience made it so that like the following years, the progression was like more steady.
Yeah, it was quite clear that Chase needed to get off of 250, I felt. It was quite clear that he had exhausted that situation.
Right. Yeah, okay. Interesting points.
Interesting points from you too, Kellen.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask just before we get off this topic then is you said phenomenal talent, and I think most people assume phenomenal talent equates to Hayden Deegan a little bit, right?
Oh, boy.
But...
Oh, boy.
Chill down. Theoretically speaking, he wins outdoors this year. Let's say he wins this title, actually. Wins his Supercross title. Wins outdoors. He can... if he wins the title the next year, he's out of 250 Supercross. Then do you say, okay, let's do another 250 motocross season? Or if you're Star, you're like, okay.
Well, immediately looking at this logically, the path is there because most likely Eli will race 2025 Supercross only. So Eli's bike would be available for someone outdoors. So that would be the prompt for the conversation. And then when it's realistic, it starts to become more of a tantalizing option. But then also, I feel like there can also be the mentality of we just want to win. So we've just won 2 Supercross titles, 1 outdoor title. Let's just win another outdoor title before we leave, just to really show everyone how good we are. There's also
Could be.
But that's also a deeper dive into different psyches, because some people are always shooting for the next challenge, the next task to conquer, and other people are just looking for the easiest success option.
Right, yeah.
Not saying that anyone that we're talking about is one or the other, just saying generally in life people are different.
Yeah, so I think the teams will continue to tailor that possible transition. I think if they see that the potential on a 450 is there in terms of like continued sustainable success of winning championships, I think we see more teams consider 450 motocross first.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, let's get into our first non-moto topic of the day. And this one was my topic that I told you. You were kind of like, I don't know if I have really an opinion on it, but I'm curious.
And I've completely forgotten what the topic is?
Media blackouts.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true.
Which has nothing to do with moto. I mean, does moto have blackouts? Like in the UK, if you...
I didn't even understand what you were talking about at first. In my mind, a media blackout is like a rider refusing to talk to all media.
Well, I mean, I should have put it as like a game blackout or a sports
no, it's just, TV blackout. You're just talking about geo-restricted content.
Pretty much, yeah. But so we were at Steve's house and we were talking about the fact that like he wants to watch the Blue Jays play the Padres this weekend. We talked about that for a minute, but he can't because for some reason Vegas is a San Diego region. I don't know how, because we're closer to San Diego here and we're not. But anyway... I like watching MotoGP stuff occasionally. I don't like watch all the races. Yeah.
I've never heard you mention MotoGP.
I don't like watching all the races or anything like that, but I do like watching clips and highlights and stuff like that. And Dorna has a stranglehold on the rights over there. And the TVs, packages that they do, the deals that they do are counterintuitive to the growth of the sport, which is what I think about with media blackouts here is like, what are you doing? Because it's one thing to block out coverage for... Like if you're trying to log into MotoGP.com and they are like, actually, in your area, CBS Sports shows it. So you can only watch it through that. That's one thing, which is a stupid thing. But I'm talking about when I'm on like Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, and I want to watch like a MotoGP highlight clip or something like that. It'll play like 2 seconds and be like, we're sorry. This is unavailable in your area.
I run into that.
And I'm just like, okay, great. Awesome. Thanks. Can't learn anything about this sport.
Yeah, I mainly run into that with F1. I wonder if this sport, does it happen for...
That's what I was trying to figure out. Like,
I don't feel like we're that, like, on that level, are we?
Maybe not. Not for social media, I wouldn't think.
And we don't have, like, we don't have internet. We don't have, like, a broadcast deal outside of America. We just have the Super Motocross Video Pass.
Right.
So I don't feel like there's a need for it in this sport.
No. But yeah, like it's all, obviously it's all based off of like TV packages and which countries buy packages for their sport and then restrict the rights for the viewers in their country so that like if you want to watch the coverage, you got to pay for that package to be able to see it. I get the logistics behind it. I still think it's dumb because if you're a a promoter for MotoGP, for example, if you're the promoter of the sport and you want to continue to grow your sport, why would you make it so it's geo-locked in certain regions to not even be able to see freaking clips of it? Like, you can't even... like.
Yeah, but it's because they're making money from broadcasters.
I don't care. You could make so much more money if you allow more people to get involved in the sport.
Yeah, but broadcast deals equal more sponsorship, etc. Like, it's saying that you've got X amount of potential viewers on a broadcast channel is quite different to saying, oh, we've got 2 social media viewers.
I guess, but if...
and they have social... it's not like it's black... it's not like there's no content there. They are still stacking social media views.
Okay. Theoretically speaking, let's just talk about Supercross then for a second. Theoretically speaking, let's say Supercross has... they don't. But let's say Supercross has 200,000 Instagram followers. They have way more than that. I think 2 million now.
Yeah, they just hit 2 million.
They have, let's say, 150,000 Facebook likes, and they have 50,000 Twitter followers or something like that. And they are geo-locking everything. So you have to be in certain regions to be able to watch their content and all this stuff like that. So they don't have any opportunity to grow. Then when they're trying to renew their broadcast deal, or let's say they're a first-time company going to a broadcast company and saying, here's all our analytics, here's all the people that watch what we're doing, here's all the people that follow and stuff like that. And they're like, great, those numbers suck. They could be way better. Why would we sign this deal as a broadcast company to broadcast your sport if there's not even an audience?
Well, Kellen, what you've done here is walked straight into business with Lewis.
Okay.
Is it possible that this is a good marketing ploy? Because what better way to get people interested and engaged than taking away what they want? And making them like, you want this? Ah, you're gonna have to work harder. And then you're like, I really want to see that video. Fuck it, I'll just buy this package.
I'm out. Honestly, if I could see MotoGP clips and everyone tells me like, dude, the racing is great, you gotta see how close it is and all this stuff like that, if I could see it, I might be more interested to actually watch the whole race. But I can't. Every time I try to click on like a Sky Sports clip, can't see it. BT Sports, whatever, can't see it. Sometimes even the MotoGP page. Sorry, region locked. I don't know. I don't know how good the racing is.
Do you listen to the Paddock Pass podcast?
I've listened to a few.
Oh, sad. I just want to watch Ted's notebook. That's all I want to watch. That's the extent of my F1 interest. I like Ted's notebook.
My opinion of growth via content is perhaps different than media organizations at a higher echelon or whatever feel about it. I think it's dumb to restrict your audience by doing something like, for example, heightening ticket prices because you could make a higher return on investment by selling 10,000 seats at $40 a ticket versus 40,000 seats at $8 a ticket. Or something like that.
What you are asking these people to do is say to their, NBC, fuck you. No, we're not. we don't want, you know what? There's someone in Afghanistan who wants to watch this video on Twitter and he'll be geo-blocked. So we're not agreeing to your terms. Fuck you. We're out.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that.
But that's what you want.
No.
Because these are terms put forth by the broadcasters.
No, I'm saying, hey, NBC, maybe don't set up a geo-blocked thing for social media content.
No, but what I'm saying is this would be put forward by the broadcaster. We will sign this deal to broadcast your series, and you can get all of the benefits that come with that, but we don't want this person to be able to see rival content in their land because we need their attention, because we are the exclusive broadcaster.
Rival content?
Well, like, for instance, I presume the reason I can't watch Sky Sports F1 clips on Twitter is because I should be watching, as an American resident, ESPN. Okay. That's why it's geo-blocked.
Yeah.
I presume.
I was thinking you're talking about Supercross because, like...
oh, no, Supercross doesn't do it.
Well, I was just saying, like, it is just NBC or the SMX Video Pass.
No, NBC was just the first channel I could think of.
Yeah, okay, fair.
I don't know many others.
Again, I get the business logistics behind it, but... me as a person and as a consumer, and I assume there are more people around the world that feel this way as well. If I can't even see it, how am I going to learn about it? how are you going to grow an audience without even showing them anything?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, you clearly need a few more Business with Lewis lessons.
Yeah. Apparently I do.
Therapy? No? Not today? No?
No, Lewis, okay. We don't need therapy today. Okay. Would you like me to do a therapy session for you?
I do need it.
Yeah, we'll get there when it's time. All right, so that's my non-moto topic, and people will probably be like, oh, you're dumb. You don't understand the logistics of it. But whatever. That's how I feel about it. Let's get into the second half of our show. Before we do, EVS Sports giving us this show every single week, and we appreciate them for it. Experience the pinnacle of knee protection and injury prevention with the EVS Web Eclipse Knee Brace. For over 39 years, EVS has relentlessly honed their engineering expertise, consistently delivering award-winning knee braces. This legacy of excellence is embedded in every facet of the new Web Eclipse, which represents the culmination of their tireless dedication to innovation and rider safety. Use code LVK30 to save 30% off today. All right, second half of the show is going to feel a little MXGP dominated because we're going to have back-to-back MXGP topics, but I think it's kind of fun ones to get into. And the first one that we wanted to talk about is, so over the weekend, Fevre won the first moto, correct?
Yes. No, qualifying race and the first moto. Yes. No? Yeah, qualifying race and first moto.
Okay, yeah. But so one got the most points on the weekend, but he got second 40? Overall.
25.
Thought we
66. Prado would have got... Well, Prado's out. Well, no, Prado's not. No, Prado's out. Yeah, okay, I guess he did.
Okay, I think Fevre got the most points on the weekend. That would have been better for us to go over before the show.
Well, I didn't know we were going to be doing that. Math with Lewis.
Well, I'm just trying to emphasize that like he's timely right now because he's had a good weekend. He's obviously inched a little bit more into the title fight that kind of Prado and Geyser are separating a little bit already, it seemed like. But,
yeah.
Anyway, so Roman Fevre is in year 10 of MXGP. His rookie year was 2015, and he won the world title that year.
Yep.
So now he's year 10 of MXGP, and we were kind of talking about when this like a little bit of a crossover happens where Geyser and Hurlings and Fevre, similar to what we talk about in the U.S. with our current crop of U.S. riders, when that turnover happens and what's the next outlook in MXGP. So... what do we think of like Roman Fevre as a rider and his career so far and like how he factors into being one of like the best MXGP riders of the last decade, but also still only has the one world title, but has won a lot of races? Like it's a weird mix.
I put this forward because I struggle with Fevre because his career, his 10 years in MXGP have been so incredible, but also with some low points, mainly because of injury. That I feel as though Hurlings, Prado, Geyser are quite clearly incredible talents, going to go down in history, amazing, brilliant, superb. And I attach Fevre to that group, but kind of like half attach.
Okay.
Which is hard for me because on his day, over the last 10 years, he has been the fastest man in the world. I think 2015 Nations. I go back to the beginning of 2016. To clarify, before, because now you have to super clarify, Geyser and Fevre were phenomenal early in 2016. They were so fast. It was incredible racing. Like they were so, so, so good. I would actually go as far as to say that was certainly Fevre's peak in my mind. That may have even been the best Geyser we ever saw. Maybe not, though. No. I'd have to go back and check. Maybe it was 2017. Or was it 2016? I don't know. Kind of lost all faith in my own argument here. But anyway, so he's been great. He's been amazing and the best rider on the planet on his day. But then also he's had seasons where he goes 20 rounds as just a top five guy with a couple of podiums. So I just struggle like where to put him in my mind as in, is he just as good as... And I guess he is as good because currently, but I guess I'm talking like bigger picture, 10-year career. Is his 10-year career as good as Geyser and Hurlings?
Mm-hmm.
Do we not give him enough credit? Do we give him too much credit? I don't know.
You'll have to maybe educate me a little bit on this, but...
Oh, here we go again.
In the down times that he's had where he hasn't been like consistently up front battling for moto wins,
yep.
Was he not like injured through a lot
of
those?
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's been like coming back from concussions. Concussions have been major for him. Coming back from broken femur, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I guess it's taken, like, there have been entire seasons. Like, mm-hmm. it's sometimes it's just, it's almost like Fever, now that I think about it, is very momentum dependent, I feel.
Right.
Because it kind of rolls or it doesn't roll. Or it rolls in one direction or it rolls in the opposite direction.
I mean, I look at him as, yeah, like top five talent in the MXGP class for the last decade or so, or whatever you want to classify it as.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think him as you know, in a public perception way, would look different had he won the 21 title too. Like, yes. I think if he has two world titles, he goes up against Hurlings and Geyser in a sort of square battle that year to a degree, like that, it would have looked a lot better on paper. Because not that 2015 was like, oh yeah, he just won against nobody. He was, you know, in a really good championship fight with like Noggle that year for a while, and then
everyone got hurt,
but for a while it was close. Like halfway through the year, I think Noggle and Cairoli were still mixing it up, right?
Yeah, Fevra did get it's hard to kind of like outlay without really going deep into it, but at the time that everyone got hurt, Fevra was really coming on.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So, although you could argue that he started taking control once everyone got hurt, there were certainly signs that he was on his way up before everyone got hurt. So you could kind of argue both sides.
Yeah, but so now he's a three-time Motocross of Nations champion?
15, 16, 17.
So four?
Last year. Yeah, because I think last year was his first time even racing the Nations since 17.
Okay, so four-time Motocross of Nations champion, which means, like, I think he's probably a French hero, right? Like, this is one of our all-time greats.
My point is, I'm like, when I preview MXGP in my MXGP podcast show on Vital MX, I said, Hurlings, Geyser, Prado are the big group, and then Fevra's like there, but not there. Like he's certainly not in the second tier. Like I put him in his own little island of like, make of him what you will.
Yeah.
Just a bit weird. Don't know.
Anyway. So with this season specifically, Prado's been really good so far, but doesn't have like as big of a championship lead as you would think. Nothing's over. I mean, honestly, the attrition rate every single year is what seems to affect the title hunt mostly.
Yep.
Right. If somehow they stay healthy all season long and Fevra beats these guys, how does that change the perception of him?
Massively.
Yeah, right?
It just cements it. Because at the end of the day, I guess when you think about it, a lot of this is prompted by the fact that his world title was 10 years ago.
I know. Or 9 years ago. It's like crazy.
I never know how
it's his 10th year in the MXGP class, so it's been 9 years since he won the title.
So like it was a while ago, so I guess that's why there's a little bit of like recency bias. Somewhat. And until the tail half of last year, he wasn't really winning consistently like that. So that also spurred him back into the conversation more so. Because from memory, I think 2021, he won one GP? Lommel? I think. Just a funny old, it'd be a good career to debate. Because like you could also throw in the conversation, what would have happened if he'd had two less concussions or, you know, one less injury?
Yeah.
Because he was hitting his head a lot for a while there. Thankfully, I don't believe it's happened for a while. But there were some scary moments in the late 2010s
with
Roman.
How long do you think he goes?
Definitely next year. Potentially the year after, and then I'd say he's done.
So after 26?
Either at the end of 25 or the end of 26.
Okay.
It's coming. Because
he moved up to 450s originally from the age rule.
Yes.
No? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because he was born on New Year's Eve, and he argued with the FIM that, like, it's one day, let me stay down, and he didn't win the argument, but ultimately, if he had won the argument, he never would have been world champion. Funny, isn't it, how life works?
Funny. Yeah, no, that's crazy. So that means he is 32 right now. Right?
Sure. Or around there.
Or is he already 33 then? Because he would have been 23. No, he'd be 32 right now. And he would be turning 33 on New Year's this coming year. So yeah, he's already... that's even crazy to think about.
32.
Like, 32. Yeah. I kind of still think of Fevra as young. like not that, like not like a young guy, but not 32 years old.
Yeah, we're old as shit.
We've gotten up in the age very quickly. But yeah, it's going to be fun to see how this MXGP season goes and which direction it goes from here, because it's, like we said, 13-point lead, I think, for Prado. Geyser's been hanging in there every single week, been right there, mixing it up. And then now Fever outscores everyone on a weekend where he probably could have swept out the weekend if things were a little bit, you know, more in his favor in that second moto. So
Yeah, if he hadn't crashed, he would have probably won the overall. So.
Right, so... Yeah, fun topic. All right, so we're roll right from that into our fan topic of the week, which has everything to do with MXGP, and this is going to be really fun to hear Lewis get up on his pedestal and share with the world what he thinks about this one. Our fan topic, brought to you by Racetech Suspension, by the way. Racetech Gold Valves provide a plush feel with drastically improved bottoming resistance and increased traction. All Racetech products are 100% guaranteed and made in the USA. Comes from at the Outside Gate on Twitter. And Lewis, he would like you to sell watching MXGP to non-Europeans.
All right. We'll just cut this when I'm done, because there's no need to drag this out for 7 minutes. Yes, all right. It's a good watch.
All right, we're done. Yep. Next.
It's all right. It's a good watch. No, where do I even begin? That's quite a loaded question. This year specifically, it's very interesting because it's like a clash of the generations. Hurlings is still kicking around. Geyser is just the safe, reliable pair of hands. Fever is still kicking around trying to get one more title as well. And Prado is now entering arguably his peak, both performance-wise and confidence-wise. So it's a real battle of like, can the young gun take down the established stars? Does Hurlings still have it? Does Fever still have it? I don't think there's any doubt about Geyser. He's just kind of, like, always there. So that's interesting in itself. You've got some very interesting personalities. Everyone hates Prado for the most part. So that's an interesting dynamic to add to the viewing experience when you consider that I believe it really pisses people off that he wins, or he has won the first four rounds. It is exciting to see such different and varied tracks as well. Like, the tracks really do impact the results one week to the next. And the first four rounds that we had this year was like the ultimate example of what MXGP has, because round one was volcanic ash, like shallow sand, I guess you'd call it, but unlike any other track in the world, I would say. Round two was a hard pack, man-made track, so jumpy, built in a parking lot. The third round was Sardinia, deep bottomless sand, old school in the dunes. It was basically, some people would say, tougher than Lommel. And then the most recent round in Trentino was an old school European hard packed track that snaked around the bottom of the Dolomites mountains. So even though the results were mostly the same, there is the potential for that to create a lot of changes parity. I think back to Vlaanderen winning Sardinia in 2022, just because the conditions and the circumstances play to his favor, whereas in America, obviously, there's more synergy from track to track, much more of a one size fits all. Second time I've used that saying on this podcast. So yeah, good. It's great.
I love your eloquent way of describing the variety of racetracks. Very, very well put on how much things have changed from round to round, how different the surfaces are. Because as an American fan, like, just, you know, from being at these races and seeing it, kind of similar round to round in the US, because everyone's gone for like the red bud, chocolate cake, yeah, kind of like wood chippy thing. Southwick is obviously still sand, yeah, but like everyone else is like...
But like even Southwick isn't sand comparable to the sand in Europe.
Right.
So that's even
like these tracks are very different.
Yeah.
So that's been... really, really cool to see the mix-up.
You've just got to get to know the personalities and the stories. I've always said, like, I do struggle to watch a race if I don't have some sort of, like... I can't just watch a race of any kind without knowing, like, stories, backgrounds. Like, I have to have a reason to kind of get personally invested, which is why Drive to Survive was good for me and probably, well, definitely... millions of other people, because it just gave you a reason to like, okay, I like that guy. Oh, I don't like that guy. Oh, I wonder what's going to happen to him. So like in that instance, for me to rattle off a couple of MXGP examples, it would be Hurlings is still fast as shit, but he can't stay healthy. So will he stay healthy? Is he still fast as shit? Where's this going to go? There's like even across four rounds, there's been signs of life, but not categoric evidence. So we're still on the edge of our seats with that. Prado has just gone from being amazing to amazing-er, which is incredible in itself. Don't laugh at me.
No, I love your the way you're putting this. Keep going.
Okay. So that's good for him. Well done to him. Proud of him. Geyser's a weird one because he's just always there, and that's the best way to say it. And some people will say that's an insult or a backhanded compliment, but it's not. It's actually the ultimate compliment in my mind, Kellen, because Hurlings has struggled to stay there, and Geyser's just always there, kicking about. Sometimes, like, I would argue he was... You know what? Interesting about this most recent round, because I would argue that all of the top four were the fastest rider at different points. I actually expected Geyser to win that round, so make of that what you will. And then Fevre, as I said, he's a mystery wrapped in a riddle in himself, because he can do it, but can he do it? And then you've got Sua, who's just always there, doesn't ever miss a GP, needs a day off, needs a vacation. You've got guys like Jonas, who have a former world champion, who's just been dealt cruel luck with injury over and over and over. And just like, but now he's on his way back. So what if he suddenly starts winning GPs again 7 years after his world title? He just finds it again. And then in the paddock, there's lots of interesting dynamics. Like Yamaha took their factory team away from Wilvo and moved it to what was previously the MX2 team, Kimia. So that's an interesting story to watch, because so far I would argue that decision is not justified. And then the Wilvo team ended up going to Fantic, and which is kind of Yamaha, which is weird in itself. And then are they going to prove Yamaha wrong? That's something to watch. GasGas versus Husqvarna and KTM for title fights in all classes is very interesting, because we still haven't really had that, I don't feel. When GasGas or Husqvarna have gone on to win, I feel like it's been quite dead certain, but like, yeah, they're going to win. We've not had a situation where KTM and either Husqvarna or GasGas are fighting tooth and nail to the death for a championship.
Yeah.
And I still don't know how that dynamic plays out. So that's fascinating to me when we get that in either America or Europe. And it seems like we're definitely going to have that in MX2. And if Hurlings gets his finger out his ass, E2, we could have that in MXGP as well. So it's all good. What I'd recommend you do is listen to the MXGP podcast show on Vital MX, my favorite podcast to do. Sorry, Kellen.
Wow. Okay. All right.
We tried to do a good job of, like, we go deep on like the rumors and the goings on in the paddock, but also we try to add the context you need. Like at the most recent podcast, we started by just flashing back to 2017 briefly, because it was valuable context for you to now understand what's happening today. In hindsight, terrible fucking idea. Got shit on repeatedly. But the intention was good. And at the end of the day, all you can do is ask for good intentions. Everyone love everyone. And that's why you should watch MXGP, because we should love everyone. I'm inclusive.
Fantastic, Lewis.
Thank you.
I mean, I'm an MXGP fan, and now you just made me even more of a one. I'm in. I bought in again.
Yeah, I'm out.
But yeah, definitely, people, like, you really should check out MXGP. Like, honestly, like even if it's not your cup of tea, because it's not athletes you can get behind and all that stuff, for all the reasons you've mentioned about the way the tracks are, the way the racing is, the dynamics within the teams, like, there's so many storylines going on that you don't even like realize happen there. Like, you just think, oh, they drop the gate and go. No, there's a lot going on.
There's a rumor at the moment as well that two American riders are in talks to race MXGP. So just leave you with that.
You'll hold on to that nugget.
Well, if I share that information, I'll just get shit on and told that I don't know anything, even though I've done valuable research, Kellen. Made lots of phone calls, got high up in some organizations to figure out what the situation is. But if I tweet the information, I'll just be told I'm an idiot and I don't know what I'm talking about. So, you know what? That can stay in Lewis's brain.
Well, I think you should tweet it.
Safety first.
Safety first.
I did do a clue on my most recent MXGP podcast.
Mm.
Do you want the clue here?
If you want, sure. What do you got?
Is the Eagle lost?
Is the Eagle lost?
Is the Eagle lost? And then the other one was, does the Finnish man like Mexican food?
Oh my gosh.
Does the Finnish man like Mexican food?
Okay.
To be honest, I said this on that podcast as well. I would love to add like a cryptic clue like that to every podcast at the end and just see if people can figure it out, like to hint at something.
I am going to go ahead and jump out and say I think most people will understand number two.
But no one has yet. I've really? Had two correct guesses for number one, and number two, no one.
Interesting. Yep. Okay, fair enough. let's get into our final topic of the day. Back into our another non-moto topic here to wrap things up. And this one, honestly, I was looking at our website to come up with some topics or ideas, because the non-moto ones, like, what we're realizing, I feel like, with the non-moto ones, Lewis, is that all of our non-moto topics, like, have to do with moto. Like, if we're upset with something, it has to do with, like, something we had to deal with at the race.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So we're trying to, like, not keep falling into that hole and do something a little bit off the wall. So this week, we're going off the wall. And the question is, Lewis, would you prefer, if you were traveling in time, would you prefer to go back to the past, and when would you prefer to go to, or in the future, and when would you prefer to go to?
You can go first.
All right. I would personally prefer to go to the future, because I would like to see, like, I don't know how far, like, I'm thinking maybe I'll go like 200 years in the future, because it would be really interesting to see if all the things that, like, I'm into now, like, either how they change or what they become. So we're into Supercross, we're into motocross. For me, like, I like video games and stuff like that. So I would like to go ahead and see, like, I'm not going to live long enough to see all that, but what does it look like at that stage? Are we on hover bikes, or, you know, what are we doing? So, like, I think it'd be cool to jump forward and see if all these hobbies that I have are still hobbies in the future.
So you're way bigger picture.
Why? Well, what did you want to do?
No, I guess similar to you. I would be interested just to, like, I would like to go forward in the future to see if this all pans out. This game of life.
So you would like to go, like, to the end of your life?
No, 5 years.
Oh, just 5 years?
Yeah, just 5 years in the future, and just see, like, and just see if it's if it actually was worth it.
Interesting.
And then I'd return to the present day and either sack it all off or be like, oh, it's worth it.
Okay. That's pretty big picture for you. But for me, it's just like, oh, I just have an interest in a hobby. I want to see it.
Oh, you think I'm bigger picture?
Well, because it's about like your life.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean going 200 years in the future and seeing hovercross isn't going to change my life.
No, yeah, I'd be interested. I'd just like to see if, like, oh, that was worth it. Oh, that did. Oh, well done. That did work out. Okay, that was worth the time, the effort, the sacrifice, the tears. And then obviously, if it isn't, then you just sack it off.
If you could go back to the past, where, like, how far would you go? Like, do you want to go relive something that's happened in your own life?
Am I just visiting the past, or am I staying in the past?
Visiting. You can determine the amount of time you wish to visit.
And I can't alter it?
No.
Okay.
You're a ghost.
Then I don't care.
Don't care?
No.
You don't want to go see, you don't want to stand trackside with New Zealand flags as Coppins goes flying by?
I only want to go back if I can alter stuff.
Interesting. Okay, I'll give you the power to alter stuff. What would you do?
Jeez, Kellen. How long you got?
Pull the cable off the spark plug on Ramon's bike so Coppins can win the world title. What year was Coppins second?
05, 07.
So off of Everts' bike?
Yeah, I don't know. Hard one for me to answer, to be honest. Quite a personal question you asked there, Kellen. Really prying, aren't you?
I'm just asking you a question. This is what we do, sir.
I would alter a lot.
You would alter a lot. Do you have any sort of thought of what you would alter first?
Yeah, but I'll keep that to myself.
All right. Okay. Fair enough. Does it have to do with, like, racing?
Everything.
Everything. You would just change everything.
I'd basically start over.
You would make it so it's impossible the internet existed?
Why would I do that? Well, I'm going back before I existed.
I gave you options. You didn't give me a single answer about time or
anything. Well, I didn't realize I could go back to before I existed.
I just went 200 years in the future. You could go back to whenever you want.
Oh, I thought you only went like 10 years in the future.
I said 200.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit weird. I thought you said 20, actually. And I thought
did you think when I said hover bikes in 10 years?
Well, Kellen's ambitious. I don't know if we'll be there in 20 years, but, you know, don't want to kill a kid's
dream.
Okay,
so you can go beyond your own life, either direction.
I don't care.
You don't care.
I just hit the reset button.
Reset button.
Or the sack it off button. depending on what each side. I'd visit the past. No, I'd visit the I'd visit the future, see if it was all worth it. And then, based on that information, I would either go back to the very beginning and start again, or I'd just come back to the present and sack it off.
Would you care at all, and it sounds like you don't, but would you care at all to go back to a historical event from the past to see if it really happened the way that it's been taught?
Do not give a fuck.
All right, fair enough. That's how you feel about it. That's fine. Yeah, for me, I would go future, and I would go ahead probably 200 years, like I said. And I would also, like, honestly, it'd be kind of cool to see my family in that many years, but I don't even know if I would know, because by that point...
Yeah, like, you would, like, although, okay, you're family, but you're not really family, so far removed.
Yeah, it's like 7-8 generations. Well, it could only be, so like, far, 4 or 5.
Like, you're so far removed, but, like, what, like, yeah, technically it's family.
Because it could be, like, my daughter's great-grandchildren would still be alive. Maybe.
200 years.
Yeah, so not their grandchildren, but their great-grandchildren, which means that someone's born 100 years-ish from now could still be alive in another 100 years after that.
It just made my mind explode a little bit, Kellen.
Okay. Sorry. So, I'm just trying to have a fun conversation with you.
Well, no, I can't do that math. Like, that's hurt my head. Like, that.
It hurts your head?
Yeah, like, that really is quite serious. No,
Can I talk short term for a second?
Sure.
Would you, right now, if you could, go to 10 p.m. at Salt Lake City and see who won and then go back? No?
No, why would I?
I don't know. I'm just asking.
It's not that big a deal, is it?
I don't know. Like, if someone said, hey, right now you can know who wins the Supercross title, and then you come back and you do all your online betting.
Okay, well, that changes it. But otherwise, what's the point in, like, you're just ruining the last four rounds for yourself?
Yeah, it's true. It loses the
luster. I am bad at that. I, like, semi-relevant. I do, I am bad at, like, I am bad at, like, watching a TV show, and then I figure out how it ends at the start, and then we'll start watching it. Because I'm like, let me see if this ends in a good way.
Do you really do that? You skip to the end of a movie?
No, not like on Twitter. I'll search it on Twitter, search the hashtag.
Oh, okay.
And I'll be like, well, that looks interesting. I wonder how they got there. And I was like, yeah, I'll watch it.
So you'll go to the end of the video.
Like, I knew who killed Ghost in Power. That I regret that to this day.
Okay. Very interesting, Lewis. That's a really odd way of consuming.
Yeah, and I regret it. Like I say, I found out who killed Ghost in Power, and then I had to watch it, and I was like, this would be so good if I didn't know.
Mm. So you would like to start a movie, go to the very end, see?
No, I don't. Not with movies.
No, just with short video clips.
No, like
on
TV
Twitter.
Shows.
But you're talking about Twitter. I don't know. Like, I'm confused.
Yeah, you go. You can search anything on Twitter.
Yeah, like, but they're not going to have full TV shows on
Twitter.
No, but
people, like, fans tweet, like, clips and stuff, so you can figure it out.
Oh, I see. So you were getting ahead on the show.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be not fun experience for me, because I'd be like, okay, now I'm watching it, and I know what's going to happen.
Yeah, but it is interesting, because then you're like, well, how are they going to end up there? Because right now, that seems so hard to get to that point.
What happens if you jump ahead to Salt Lake City, and Chase Sexton's holding the trophy, and you're like, hold on, and you come back, and you're like, How did we get there? Okay, I got to see this.
Well, that wouldn't be so shocking because it's only 15 points. If it was like Roxanne, then I'd be like, okay.
What happened?
Let's come back and figure this out.
Oh, man, that would be good. All right, so yeah, that was a fun little topic to end up on our show here today. Yeah, fun show. Like I said, tried to be a little bit off the wall. I think that was definitely a good way to do it instead of just rehash some of the same things we've talked about. So. Good little roundabout way. What was your favorite topic of today? Which one did you enjoy the most?
The future one was quite good.
At the end?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you would have liked your stand on the pedestal and...
No, I didn't like that. I hated that from start to finish. Yeah, it made me uncomfortable.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Then we won't have you give monologues anymore.
Yeah, it made me really uncomfortable, to be honest. I kind of wanted it to end. I was like...
all right, that's our show. We're both going to be in Nashville this weekend, ready for the showdown, and we'll come back from that and talk about all kinds of fun topics, because... it's just going to be us and Dark this weekend.
Yep.
So, good show. Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Big shout out to EVS Sports, Nomura, and Racetech for helping us get the show on every single week. And we'll be back after Nashville to talk a little bit more about some moto, a little bit about non-moto, and everything in between. See you guys then.